Hi guys, welcome to Get Love Now, Team Easy Dating. Guys, we're so happy you're here. We've got the best couple of love experts in the United States. Love these two. We've got Scott and Emily McKay. Will you guys say hi real fast?
Hi real fast.
That was awesome. So guys, we're going to hop right into it. So for those of you that don't know our industry that well, Scott and Emily are literally considered like the darlings, like the perfect married couple. So is it true? Are you guys...
Because of her.
What?
It's all because of her. She carries that whole bit. Yeah.
I truly believe that, Scott. So tell me, are you guys really the perfect couple? Talk to me about your marriage.
Oh, I don't know what perfect means, but definitely what you see is what you get. I had lots of people when we first started who would look at me and look at our relationship and how we were on our podcast and accuse me of having hired her as a paid spokeswoman. You know, she was an actress. And I was like, well, you know, if she's an actress, she's really putting in overtime because we've already, you know, had a kid together.
That was 12 years of overtime.
Not by now. Yeah. I mean, that's a lot of hazardous duty pay over 12 years for sure. But it's what you see. And we really are soulmates. We're best friends. I think the important part that a lot of times people overlook in terms of really getting the right person in your life is not only are you attracted to them, but you get each other. I mean, for us, ideas like trust and communication, all those things that people call cornerstones of relationships, those are, you can throw a blanket over them with we get each other. We just connected early on. And so I feel like she's one of me. She's on my team and she feels like that with me. And what that does is it makes every day wonderful. We don't ever have to quote unquote work on our relationship because we add value to each other simply by being around each other every day.
Plus he has this wonderful little phrase, perfectly imperfect.
Oh yeah, then there's that.
Yeah. So even where we have shortcomings, we strengthen each other.
I was told that was very wabi-sabi of us the other day.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so I have to go brush up on my wabi-sabi because maybe I'm teaching it without even realizing. So there's that.
All right. So, Emily, when you guys do have an argument, what is the best way for him to handle you?
Oh, with flowers and apologies.
Oh,
and
flowers my ass. You've already told any guys, just scratch that. If you buy flowers just because she's mad at you, you're doomed.
Oh, yeah.
If
we get more mad. Yes. It's backfires. I mean,
what are you saying?
Yeah, I totally agree with that because then you just trigger, hold on. So every time you get flowers, you must be in a mad and angry state. So it's like right. Flowers, I'm mad.
It's like trying to bail a lifeboat instead of something you really meant from the bottom of your heart, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, flowers is a mistake. It really does make us more angry because it's like, now you bring us flowers? Couldn't you have done this when we weren't angry and you did it because I love you, basically?
You're making yourself look so high maintenance. When in reality, I have to talk this woman into buying her own self stuff. One time, you know, she wanted black pearls for years and years and years. And they're like $1,000 a string. And she's like, no, that's too much money. So we go to the place in the world where they have these things and they, you know, cultivate them or whatever. And the most incredible string of black pearls of all time is like $68. And she's like, oh no, I already got something today. If you don't buy these black pearls, I'm going to buy them for you and basically, you know, wrap them around your neck or something. No, but you know, that's the kind of woman we're dealing with here. So all this talk about you better give me flowers and whatever, it's all an act.
Now,
she's fronting.
But in all seriousness, we, the best way to deal with, you know, a woman who's angry, even myself, is first decide what the situation is. Does she need time to chill? Or, you know, is she needing a hug and say, you know, I love you. Let's talk about this.
I was thinking that and a kiss.
That too.
Look, if you want to shut up a man, you feed him. You want to shut up a woman and make everything better, you kiss her. But yeah, I'll hug you and tell you everything okay, that everything's going to be okay and be believable about it. That's kind of a big deal too. You're right on.
Oh yeah. I mean, it helps to have a hug. And if you're in the wrong, an apology goes immensely a long, long way.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes people apologize when they haven't done any wrong. A lot of women are like that. They just go, I'm sorry all the time.
And that's kind of indicative of low self-esteem. But I mean, for men, we think it's really macho and that we're somehow being tougher if we don't ever apologize for anything or if we don't ever tell people we love them at all. And in reality, that's just not what being a man's all about. You have to have that strong vulnerability. And of course, vulnerability is a widely misunderstood word for men. It doesn't necessarily mean you're being weak. Sometimes your vulnerability means you're strong enough to take the risk of doing what it takes to get what you want or to make a situation right, even though you may get hurt doing it. And I think, that's what you're talking about. You want me to be vulnerable. Wow, I need some coffee or something, and it's afternoon. Be vulnerable enough to, step in there and say, hey, what do you need right now? Not that I'm going to be Mr. Fix-It, which, of course, we as guys love to do. But really, listen. But I was going to say, I was waiting for you to say, feed me and let me take a nap. Because if we're hungry and cranky, I think that's 99.999% of when we get, with each other.
Right.
But, again, since we're best friends and we get each other, we don't take things serious. We don't take things so seriously. We don't take ourselves so seriously. I never for a second ever thinks that she has it in for me. Mm-hmm. We don't ever insult each other. I can't remember the last time we flat out just insulted each other.
We haven't.
Well, it would be like insulting ourselves.
Yeah.
Yeah. But definitely hold her, tell her everything's going to be okay and mean it.
Give her peace and security. Make sure that you're not leaving. The worst thing couples can do sometimes is hold the threat of, if you don't make me happy or if you keep me angry, I'm leaving.
All right.
And that adds to insecurity, and that in itself creates a lot of issues within a relationship. And so when couples can restrain themselves and not hold that over each other, making sure that she feels secure, that you're not going anywhere, that you're there for the long haul, and you're going to work whatever this problem out is, that you're tougher together, she'll love you more for that.
Yeah. I think it's just immaturity when people leverage each other like that. What's funny, Mike, is sometimes guys will call me and they'll say, hey, my wife or girlfriend said this to me last night. What did she mean by that? And my answer is always the same. It's like, I don't know, go ask her. How am I supposed to know? I mean, if the two of you have been dating for months or years and you don't even know how to talk to each other about clarifying what you just said, guess what? There's no connection there. I mean, that's probably an ill-advised relationship. You got to get that taken care of at the very least before you're going to be able to have that kind of soulmate connection you're looking for, no doubt.
Wow, I love that. And I think that's what a lot of people need to hear is maybe just exit stage right if you guys can't communicate. So since this summit is for women, what do you think women can do when a man's just upset, other than feed him and let him take a nap? What else can she do?
Boom. Mic drop. Feed us and let us take a nap.
If it were only that easy.
How is it not that easy?
Well,
give us some space. Maybe let us retreat to our cave and
right. Watch
a game.
Everybody acts so differently, but when you're under a lot of stress and a lot's coming at you at once, you just come off of work, your boss has yelled at you, things are just feels like it's falling apart, and you come home where it should be your sanctuary, and the first thing you get is, yeah, exactly. You've done everything wrong, and you're not allowed to relax. You're not allowed to be human and be upset.
The first thing we want is an alcoholic beverage, not the rant about what happened with all your girlfriends. And oh my God, you're not going to believe. Look, we love our women. We love hearing about everything, but maybe not when we still need to decompress,
Right.
So you make a great point.
Yeah, exactly. So you got to give the man space, whether it be he just came home from work and you got all this exciting stuff to share, or you're in an argument. A lot of guys need that space to calm down, cool off, rethink his thoughts, and come back and say, okay, let's talk about this. I'm okay now.
We're trying to provide and protect. We're trying to be the man. We're trying to take care of all those things lower in Maslow's hierarchy so that women are free to be feminine and do the things that are going to be stress-free for you. We want to alleviate stress. We want to protect and provide. And we've got to have room to do that. And sometimes that is stressful. And I think, sometimes when we don't do that as men, women kind of either take that up or they'll kind of start hey, you know, I'm having to do the masculine stuff for you. What the heck's your problem? And then we get defensive about it. So sometimes it's a two-way street. You really have to look at the situation, see what's up. But I agree with you.
And even if the guy is in the wrong, he's done something he should apologize for, give him a day or two. Sometimes guys need time to process this stuff and realize, okay, that wasn't exactly the way to handle that. And she's upset with me, so I need to come around and make this right. You know, give him some space, give him some time. Things will work out. But you can't push it. You can't force it.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we should, in a relationship, both men and women should choose, you know, the battles that we fight very carefully. I mean, if you get angry with each other 60 times a day, you know, it's like crying wolf. You know, when Emily gets really testy with me and lets me have it, I deserve it because it'll happen once every 3 or 4 months. And that's when I know, okay, remember, she's on my team. She's one of me. We connect. We're a lot alike. So chances are she's going to have a point. And when I let her have it, I love her. I'm on her team and I will have a point. And she's also very good about sitting back and going, okay.
You got a point.
And of course the kids pick up on this. You know, we have kids in the house and because we don't insult each other, the kids can quabble over toys or mm-hmm. quibble over toys, squabble, quibble,
squabble, right?
Squabble, quibble. a quabble would be kind of a sniglet of both of those things, which are ironically rather similar anyway. But the kids don't really call each other names. They don't insult each other. I mean, we've seen families where the kids go around going, I hate you. You should never have been born. Go away. I hope you run away and get hit by a car. And we're like,
and that was a true story.
That's a true story. And I mean, it's like the parents are like, oh, this is normal. They're just kids. It's like, eh, no, not in our house, you know? So, you know, our kids are impetuous. They get into stuff, they get into trouble, but they don't insult each other. They take care of each other. Big brother takes care of little sister. Little sister looks up to big brother, you know, because that's what we're modeling around here. You do look up to big brother. So, yeah, I'm joking, of course.
And what's interesting about that is how we interact together, they'll mm-hmm. see that as normal.
Yeah.
And for the future, that's what they'll look for in their relationship. So right. We're modeling what they should look for and strive for in their happiness.
Yeah, they'll grow up to go looking at the news stations and ranting at the television set, just like their dad does. They'll grow up thinking that's perfectly normal.
Okay. I am so glad you guys brought up your kids because you guys are.
Too, otherwise they'd be orphans.
That's true. Yeah. You did need to bring them up. Yeah. All right. So you've got your kids and you guys are notoriously known for being like the king and queen of excitement after kids. And so we need to emulate what you guys are doing. So what are you guys doing to still like get out and have adventures now that you have kids?
I want to say something before, okay, before everybody feels like there's just no way in hell they're going to keep up. We made meatloaf last night. I went to bed. Okay. So, I mean, it's not like our life is this incredible nonstop highlight reel like you see on our Facebook page. We do have the mundane life that everybody else does quite often.
Although so, it was weird meatloaf.
It was weird meatloaf, but in a good way. We made Mexican meatloaf. So yeah, we are being adventurous even when we're making dinner. And we are foodies. So if y'all come over our house, I mean, you may be treated to like Ethiopian or Indian or some weird hybrid version of Mexican sushi. You know, I mean, you could have lots of wonderful things if you come over. I'm not making my own point anymore. Yeah, hell yeah. We live a pretty exciting life, even when we're at home. And we do that because we believe in adventure. We don't believe in just sitting around and watching someone else do something on TV. We believe in prioritizing, for example, experience and adventure over material possessions. You know, we make sure we're outfitted the way we need to get our adventures done, but we're not trying to get the bigger house or the, you know, more expensive German car to keep up with the neighbors. You know, we've long since realized that 10 years from now, that's going to matter. Whereas, you know, you can't take the trip that we did with the kids in the Middle East and North Africa away from us, even if you come repossess everything else, you know.
True.
Is that all you got to say on that?
No, we have plenty to add.
Well, stole all the thunder.
As far as adventure goes, there's 2 points I wanted to make. First of all, life doesn't end after marriage and life doesn't end after children. We just simply take them with us.
I would argue it got even better. I've gone on more adventures and crossed more items off the bucket list since we've been married and even more since the kids were born.
Right.
Yeah.
That's true. And the other point too is because we all like each other, we like spending time together, and we want to spend as much time with the children because someday they'll be gone, all grown up and not, you know, living their own lives.
Which the others are.
Exactly. Yeah. We have two older ones. Yeah. They're already doing that. Yeah. But we've decided to make a family hobby. And that gives us something to unite and have a goal for together.
Which one? Which family hobby are you talking about?
Well, okay. So we have the travel, but we also have the BMX where we ride bikes and compete and all that good stuff. And so we're always together. But, you know, anytime you do something as a group and you have a common goal together, no matter what group that is, whether it be family or a cluster of strangers, when you have a goal, you unite, you fight together, you have something to work and have fun with. And so I encourage all families to find something that y'all can do as a family to unite each other stronger, because the bonds aren't as strong as they used to be in this world.
Fight together for what?
To stay together and be happy.
It's a fight?
Okay, that's not a fight. But you get the idea.
Kids to soccer and then one to fencing and the other to indoor skydiving. And then I guess it matters in the way you're talking about it. It could be a fight to stay together. But yeah, I mean, I think it's sort of a happy accident that they all gravitated towards bicycle motocross. Because, I mean, that's something that's in my history. And then finally, my son decided he wanted to do it. And sister wanted to do what brother did. And mama decided, yeah, I think I want to try that myself too, because the ladies out there having too much fun. But it turns out, you know, that my daughter's a 5-year-old little girl, and she races, you know, in the mama class, and those have fewer riders overall than, say, 9 experts where you go to a national and there's 200 of them. So lo and behold, you know, the two women in the family, the, you know, my daughter and my wife here are geniuses at this sport and are on the national level and everything. So now we're starting to travel, and our trips are to the national circuit and the world championships, and we get in our RV and we do the national BMX circuit. So that's kind of what we're doing this year. Whereas last year it was more the world schooling thing, where we would plan a big international trip and take them abroad and then maybe go on the RV around the country and do some national parks and so forth. So it's kind of like the same show, only with a different theme this season, you know, for 2017. I think that's key, because then, you know, we're not only involved together, but we're going out and having those experiences, but we're also not rigid in what those experiences are going to look like. I mean, we went and did international travel for years and years and years, and we're already itching to do it again, and we will. But this year, it's all about chasing number plates and bicycle motocross, and we're having a blast doing it. But you know, I think there are macro adventures like that, and there are also micro adventures. You know, we'll go out to the lake and we'll float down the river. We'll take the RV to somewhere local and go to, you know, the hill country around Texas for the weekend. Or, you know, we'll try a new restaurant, or we'll cook something different at home, or we'll go
hike somewhere in the nearby park.
Right. Go bird watching, or my son and I like to take our snake hooks out and go looking for snakes and things like that. Or we'll go to a new trail and ride our bikes together. All of those still beat sitting at home, and they're all kind of those micro adventures. Adventures are just getting out of your comfort zone and having a little fun and getting a little excitement.
I love that. That sounds exciting. Beautiful. All right. So I'm getting like all these calls from women, and they're having a lot of trouble in their relationship, and maybe they're not happy. I want you guys to define this for all of our women out there. What are the most important predictors that a couple will stay together?
Predictors?
Yeah, I mean, well, what makes people, you can predict that couple is going to stay together or that couple breaks up.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I'm pretty good at that. I can attend a wedding and give you approximately how long it lasts.
With frightening accuracy.
Yeah. I've only been wrong once. And they actually lasted an extra year longer than I anticipated.
It was only an extra year. Let's not mention any names.
That's impressive.
So there's actually a few clues. The first one is how mature they are. You know, how seriously do they take their vows or their dedication to each other, whether they, you know, get married or not, but how dedicated are they to each other seriously and maturity. If they treat it like it's a game, it won't last. It'll be one of the shortest weddings or shortest relationship. Another predictor is whether they trust each other. You can tell that really easy. You know, if she tends to have this jealousy or he has a jealousy tendency, that's a huge predictor that they're going to have turmoil in the relationship. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily that they'll break up, but it won't exactly be a happy relationship. There's a few other predictors as well. Jealousy is another one. I'm not talking about jealousy in the terms of her thinking he's going to cheat or he thinks she'll cheat, but jealousy in the terms of they don't like hanging around other couples because it makes them feel bad about their own relationship.
Oh my. Yeah, that's rough. Yeah, that falls under the category of, is it relatively obvious one of these people is settling for the other? Like, you know, did someone rope this person into this relationship when they really don't want to be there? And you know, kind of along those lines are, did these people have options? I mean, were they what I call connectable? Did they have enough going for them that they were ready to be one half of a great relationship and that made them desirable to other people? A lot of people are like, no, don't date a whole lot of people. And, you know, you'll never be able to settle down with one person if you date so many people. But see, what happens is when the first person who comes along who either, you know, will put up with you, and I mean, we joke about this, right? Oh, she's the one to put up with me. When that person comes along and you don't perceive that you have any other options and you marry this person, what happens if 6 months down the road, the woman of your dreams comes along? But you feel like, oh, now it was time to get married and this is what should have happened. Well, then you're going to have those feelings of, you know, your nose is pressed against the glass looking at the greener pastures out there. It's much better when you've chosen the person who you really connect with, who you really get. I mean, the trust, the communication you talk about, again, it's all descendant from that. And then, you know, these people are like best friends. They're not fighting. They don't like not get each other. There's no resentment there. It's not like one person just doesn't want to be there. I always look at, you know, a key indicator, do these people even like each other? I mean, we've had couples over for dinner and they can't stand each other.
They talk bad about each other in front of each other. They embarrass each other.
Right. Wow. And you know, yeah, right. And they'll kind of like dig at each other across the table. I mean, we've had people come over our house and go, how come you can't be more like him? Like Emily's husband. And we're just like, okay, y'all have a good evening. I think I'm going to go retire. You know, I mean, it's not good. I mean, they're doing this in public. So all of that matters. I have something to, yeah, the respect issue is massive. You got to respect yourself. You got to be ready to be one half of a great relationship. You know, you, a key issue there, and this is pandemic, is a lot of times also people will get into relationships and indeed marriages wondering how to get out of it. Like, what's this man going to do for me? What's this woman going to do for me? It's all take, take, take. And unfortunately, as you know, Mike, as you're in the same field we are, a lot of this dating advice just feeds that narcissism. You know, they take this reason why people are frankly still single. Like, you know, a lot of women out there, a lot of men are angry at the other gender. You know, I can't stand them. They're all liars. They're all cheats. They're all terrible people. Can you find me a good one? But they won't let go of that bitterness. So no, they're not going to find a good one. And then a lot of women, we do see them kind of thinking, okay, men are toxic. Masculinity is bad. We have to kind of keep these men at bay and make sure they give us what we want, or because if we leave them unchecked, it's just, you're going to do bad things and misbehave. So you get a lot of dating advice that's like, hey, whisper three things into a man's ear and he will love you and only you and worship you and buy you things and never look at another woman. It's like, well, look, honey, what are you going to contribute to that relationship? What value are you bringing to him? So when a couple is going to stay together, what they're thinking about is, what value do I bring to this relationship? Not how am I going to get from this other person? Because when you're generous with each other, that's when this doesn't seem like work anymore. Because I'm not just angling and negotiating for what I'm going to get and be left with the spoils from that. I get more than I ever expected because she's giving.
I do too, like those pearls.
Well, yeah, a long time since the pearl. But like, you know, when that's a two-way street, that portends a good relationship because, you know, you have people who are givers. I also think, you know, and you talked about this with the jealousy. Mm-hmm. I talk more in terms of optimism. I think when people think the best of each other, when they're assuming this is going to go well, instead of fearing that there's, you know, some kind of bad thing under every rock that's going to jump out and kill their relationship, or this person can't be trusted, or they're going to start a fight, or I want to know where they are every second of every day because I don't trust them. You know, that's not optimism. That's pessimism. So really, you're looking at a three-legged stool here. You're looking at the generosity. You're looking at the optimism. And then you're looking at that overarching, do we get each other? I mean, are we best friends? Because if we're not, that relationship's going to fail. I think you could also add in there, okay, are you mentally stable? Are you inherently a kind person? Are you mature enough to handle a relationship? All of those things, of course, contribute to the longevity of a relationship also, for sure.
That was awesome. That was phenomenal advice. And I hope people rewatch that because that was spot on. What I want to talk about next is, Scott, you were just talking about how, you know, sometimes couples get off track and all of a sudden they're best friends and then they're like all of a sudden insulting each other and saying mean things to each other, but they are meant to be best friends and are meant to come back to that beautiful union. How do we get them back on track?
Well, they have to realize what the underlying cause is. A lot of times there's a lot of pent-up resentment, the lack of communication to express themselves. And then like Scott said, you know, they're not viewing the other person as having their best interests at heart.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of times with the miscommunication, it's the other person thinks the worst of each other. They're thinking, well, he's just out to get me and he doesn't really care. Or she's just a selfish little witch and she's just going to be the way she is and I just have to put up with it. Trying to find a word. And so when you have two people who are resentful and bitter and don't have the
bitch
tools.
Isn't in her vocabulary. That's why I love her.
Anyway, back to my point. So when they're thinking, and the worst part is they at one time did have this love, this respect, this great communication. And somewhere along the line, they allow it to slip through the cracks. They allow disrespect and resentment to breed and grow and flourish. And what they need to do is get back to the basics and say, you know what? We got married because we loved each other. We actually had the best intentions for each other. Let's get back there. Let's start there and talk. And let's find out what it is that's upsetting the two of us. And then you can realize, I didn't realize I was hurting you that way. I'm really sorry. And I will make some changes and we'll make things better. And he can do the same in return. You know, sweetheart, I love and adore you. I did not realize that when I did this or that, that it had that effect on you. And it's amazing how you can start all over again. A lot of these couples, they're not lost. They're not hopeless. They just need to get back to the basics.
You wandered off the path a little bit.
Yeah.
Two things to add there. First of all, I hear from a lot of couples who are struggling that, you know, this is because of the cumulative effect of all the small things that this person did to me. You know, in other words, it just got pent up over time. It's like every time you throw a pebble on the little pile, it becomes a mountain sooner than later or later than sooner. Forgiveness. You got to treat your partner as a human being. They're not perfect. Like you said, we're going to fail each other. We're not going to always get everything right. But if you harbor that resentment and you fail to forgive, then you're going to start, you know, filling your soul with darkness, really. I mean, one pebble at a time. And then that just one day morphs into full-blown hate and resentment. You know, again, it's all optimism. You've got to see the best in each other. And the other one, I'm just going to throw it on the table. I mean, because I don't want to be Pollyanna-ish about this. Sometimes life happens. I mean, couples go through tragic events together. Something very traumatic happens. Something very emotionally wrenching happens. They go through a really tough time for whatever reason, and they let that drive a wedge in their relationship. And I mean, sometimes it's so hard not to, especially when you look at this person and you say, okay, well, you know, when I think of you, I think of these hard times or this tragedy because you were in it with me. You know, if you have a bad experience associated with a house or a car, you know, you can get out of it. But, you know, when you're committed to someone and you've had this shared bad experience together, you've got to psychologically understand that you're going through life on a common path. It isn't because of this person that we had this problem, hopefully, or, you know, this person shouldn't remind you of that issue you've got to resolve and move past any more than looking in the mirror should, you know. But I do see a lot of couples who let that wedge get driven in when something tragic happens or difficult.
And when they get to that point in life, they not only that, but they also start living separate lives. They do different activities. They have different hobbies. They go on separate vacations. They really are just become roommates.
Yeah, ye olde we grew apart excuse.
Absolutely.
And a lot of times when people marry too young and they haven't really found their identity yet, they can legitimately grow apart. So that's, you know, plus one for making sure you're mature enough to be ready to handle a long-term relationship before you just dive right in because, you know, you're Pollyannishly in love and, you know, we should be together.
And this is where when you have activities together, you help draw that unity together because you're spending so much time together, you're forced to have to communicate. That helps the communication lines to be there.
I think also the elephant in the room here is if you marry each other just because you're hot for each other sexually, that is going to fade. And I'm not saying you can't keep a marriage hot because she's my best friend. We find, you know, that makes our sex life hotter because, you know, we actually like each other and she's my favorite person in the whole world. But when people get married just because they're sexually attracted to each other and they're basing the relationship on that cornerstone, energy, you know, or energy. Yeah. It's not going to last. It's not a solid foundation if it's just that.
All right. Last question. So women are a constant problem is the man that they're in a relationship is not giving enough effort or not doing something. And then they tell her, or she will tell him the needs she has and he will not deliver. And then maybe she will do it over and over and over again and not deliver. And she continually tells herself, wow, this is a great guy. He's fantastic. But the relationship is not that wonderful and she can't seem to get it. How do you tell her to, if she needs to, get out of the relationship where she doesn't have the strength to do it and she just kind of keeps hoping and holding on to the fact that, like, you know, I'm a little bit older and this guy is a fantastic guy and it's so hard to find a fantastic guy, but the relationship is bad?
Well, that's a hard one because you're dealing with a lot of strong emotions. Yeah. Not just the fact that she's in love with this guy, but she's also in love with the idea of being in love and having a relationship. And the worst part is the fear outweighs any of that. The fear is so great that she can't get, a lot of times a lot of women can't get past overcoming that fear. The fear of loneliness to them is worse than dealing with a bad relationship. But when you're in a relationship where the guy isn't mature and he doesn't want to participate in the relationship, it could be a number of reasons. You know, either there's things that can be fixed if you can get him to find out what the problem is, what's the obstacle. But speaking purely from, you know, he's a bad apple, she's going to have to find it within herself to realize that what's worse, being in a bad relationship, you know, turning out that, you know, 60 years later, looking back at history and going, maybe being in a bad relationship was actually worse than being single and actually having the opportunity to find my Mr. Wonderful. And helping her realize that there is a future ahead of her with better options has been a great way to help women get past that. You know, everybody needs hope. If you have hope, you have something to strive for. And without it, you tend to stay stuck. But, you know, staying in a boat that's sinking isn't going to change things.
There's a couple things that come to mind there. First of all, there's the whole basis for the relationship. And then there's what's happened since the relationship started. I have this concept, you know, it's the phrasing of it isn't original, but I think not many people have given thought to what I'm thinking of behind it. And that's this idea of being in love with love. Obviously, that's almost a trite expression. But to me, what that means is I wanted the relationship. I have this vision of what this intimacy looks like. And this is what I want a relationship to look like. And then it becomes almost immaterial who the other person is who gives that to me. Because, you know, I have an agenda. It's like a love agenda, a relationship agenda. But what happens is you meet this other person and they're a human being and they have their own idea of what this is. And when you get with someone, you may get along. But if you have this privatized agenda of what you think a relationship needs to look like, and you're on that agenda, that's going to leave the other person out in the cold sooner than later.
And they'll always disappoint.
Yeah, right. They'll always disappoint. And then all that, their needs are never going to get met either. So it's almost like back to this narcissism of I want what I want. Sometimes it feels even benevolent because after all, I want someone to love. I want to love him and squeeze him and name him George. You know, you have this whole idea of what this relationship is going to be like. And you don't see it as anything but benevolent and wonderful. But it still is leaving her idea of it out in the cold. Now, the weird part is sometimes women have been in a bad relationship, or sometimes they've been disappointed, or they're lonely. So when a guy comes along and has a, you know, pretty good plan, she'll go, sure, I'm in. And the guy goes, oh, everything's great. But it still doesn't deal with the fact she has that vision of a relationship. So when there's that communication problem, I expected this out of you, and the guy's just pushing against it. They need to perhaps connect and say to themselves, okay, what are our expectations here of what's going on in this relationship? The other part, I think, is a lot of guys really are lost in terms of what it means to be the man in a relationship. I mean, if she's making all the money and then she comes home and she's taking care of the baby and she's the one who knows how to cook and she's the one who knows how to do the laundry, he's left thinking, okay, I guess I'm waiting for the sink to break so I can do something around here. I'm just going to be in here watching SportsCenter while you take care of everything. Someone mentioned to me one time that men being the providers and the protectors and the guys who, you know, want to be the heroes for women, often our psyche dictates to us that if women have something covered, we let them cover it. Because that's not where they need us to step in and be that provider and protector. So, like, you know, absolutely, you know, notorious is like PTA meetings and what's going on at the kid's school and what homework they have to do. The woman's taking care of that. And the guy's just going to distance himself and go, oh, it's all taken care of. But if they're like a single dad, you know, they're on it like white on rice. But if the woman comes to him one day and goes, you know, for this entire school year, it's March, you haven't helped him with his homework once, you don't even care what his grades are. And he's going to be blindsided by that. And he's just, and he might not even know what to say to that. He's just going to go, my God, yeah, I'm horrible. But meanwhile, it's in our nature to let women take care of what they have taken care of. And so when it becomes this kind of lopsided deal where the women are taking care of everything and the woman finally waves her hands around and goes, are you ever going to do anything? He's kind of left asking, well, what, for example? And then she just goes, oh, you know, and storms out of the room. So sometimes there's a very logical progression here based on male-female interaction and our own tendencies by gender and what we sexually attract each other with that's going on there. And you kind of almost have to bring some pragmatism into this whole conversation and deal with it. But again, if it's a maturity issue and the guy's just not going to deal with it, then, you know, either he needs to decide how much he values the relationship and be proactive and being one half of a great relationship, or like Emily said, the breakup might have to happen. Of course, this is all, you know, made a whole lot more complex when you have children and extenuating finances. Circumstances and finances. And if the woman feels trapped, like she doesn't have anywhere to go if she leaves, you know, but it's a huge, huge question, which we don't have time to address in full, certainly.
Scott, I want to go back to your example where you talk about the PTA, and the father hasn't been helping with the kids' homework all year, and it gets to March, hasn't done anything, and she just throws her hands up and goes, "Come on, I need some help." What could she have done maybe in like September or October that we can actually use as an actionable, easy thing she can do to get men to, you know, do what they want without getting to the blow up stage?
The easiest way to do that is find the time that usually either he or both of you, if you both have a set time where you can relax and chill without the kids, you know, the kids have gone to bed, you have an extra 30 minutes where you can chit chat. If you can make that a routine, that's great. And that would be the time to address things happening in your daily routine. You know what? Our son or our daughter's having this or that issue, and I'm not sure how to address that. Do you have any ideas, sweetheart? I really could use your input. Or, you know, I'm having a hard time and kind of overwhelmed with a few projects at work. Sweetie, can you do me a favor? Can you step in and help me out with their homework?
Well, also, you know, address it as soon as you start feeling it instead of allowing yourself to be this martyr until you just can't handle it anymore. I think that's huge.
That's great advice. Thank you very much. I'm going to leave it open to you guys. What is one thing? So our summit's Get Love Now, and we're focused on relationship advice with the two of you. What one thing do you want to leave with our lady viewers as the chupacabra of advice?
You want to go first?
I'll go first. Ladies, realize there are good men out there. You know, don't let you know, the toxic masculinity media of women who are angry at men steal all the thunder. The guys who aren't bad guys are going to retreat from that because we don't want to get involved with that argument because we're not going to win that argument. It's kind of propagandized and, you know, we're essentially sold to sit down and shut up anytime we have anything to say about defending our masculinity anyway. But meanwhile, the vast majority of men out there really just want to treat a good woman right. But you have to be one half of a great relationship in order to attract that guy. Ladies, you can be really sexually attractive and you can find that men take you out and they just want to have sex and kick you to the curb and they don't want a relationship and you can get more angry about it. And then all of a sudden, all these men are jerks and they're dogs and they only want one thing. And guess what? It becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy because men who actually do respect a woman and want a relationship aren't going to get a relationship with a woman who doesn't respect him or men in general. So, you know, the ironic part there is, you know, since you're still sexually attractive, plenty of men will go out with you and try to have sex with you, but there's no way in hell they're going to get in a relationship with you. And, you know, before there's a knee-jerk reaction to that emotionally, ladies, that's not gender-specific, okay, at all. That goes both ways. You know, if there's a guy out there, you know, maybe you want a man who's a good provider and protector, but if he's just bitter towards women and he's just a misogynist, you know, there are women out there who will let that guy, if he's got lots of money, take her to Ruth's Chris Steakhouse for steak and lobster, but there's no way in hell she's going on a second date with him because he's a disaster. So, you know, this human tendency, you know, where the vice and virtue lies between sexes is really irrelevant. You know, it's not gender specific. If there's a person who is trying to get a relationship, but they're not ready to be one half of that relationship because of their attitude towards the person in particular or the other gender in general, that's never going to work. So you always want to be optimistic, generous, and look for that person who gets you and you get them. You know, think in terms of here's a human being I'm attracted to, not here's a completely different species of people from a different planet who I'll never understand.
Oh, I would say, ladies, you need to have high standards. If you're not in a relationship now, make sure that the one that you pick meets every one of your standards. You know, don't settle for just anybody. Also, in requiring those standards, you know, if you look within yourselves, it's a big movement to, well, he needs to like me for who I am and what I am. But what if who I am and what am I who I am and what I am is not all that great. You know, might want to look inside and see if there's any improvements that need to be made. Because when we actually work on ourselves, and every one of us has something to work on because none of us are perfect, including myself. But if we work on ourselves, we're not going to want to settle on somebody who isn't. If he's not working to make himself the greatest man on earth, then what do I need him for?
Well, on that note, I would add that it's shocking to me how most human beings in a relationship end up with who they think they deserve instead of who they really want. And that has a lot to do with self-esteem and really your dating history and not wanting to have your heart broken.
Oh, yeah. And so when you find this great man, you know, have love and respect for each other. You're looking for the best intentions for the both of you. You know, if you find a guy and he's not giving and he's very selfish, well, that's not the guy for you. Higher standard would be someone who is like yourself, a giving and loving individual. And don't settle for less.
If your dad or your mom wasn't a great person, and this, again, I'm taking this from a gender non-specific perspective, but ladies, if your dad wasn't the greatest guy, you're not doomed to marry your dad 2.0. Okay, please, please have an open mind. And even if you have to get therapy or whatever to get that covered, not every guy is going to reflect what you saw modeled growing up.
That's great. Thank you. All right, guys, below this video, there's going to be a free gift that Scott and Emily are giving away. Guys, why don't you tell our audience what you're giving away?
Well, since she doesn't like to brag, I'm going to tell the ladies that what they're in for is her amazing audio on how to take control of your dating life. If you like what we've been talking about here, you get a fluff-free, full-length audio where Emily's going to tell you how to not feel like you're helpless and, you know, that you're kind of chasing this guy, but how to make the guys come to you and how you choose the right man and get the relationship you want by taking control and having options. It's an awesome, awesome audio. And to go along with that, if you sign up for her newsletter, we'll give you a couple more free reports that are really super good. One of them is how to know whether he really wants to marry you or whether he's just playing games with you. And that's yours free also. And her newsletter is, you know, just chock full of great advice. You know, doesn't come every day, just a couple times a week. And most importantly of all, there's a little either pink or red button up in the right-hand corner of the link where you can click on it and talk to us live one-on-one for 25 minutes just to kind of head check you if you had a couple questions for us, see where you're at. And perhaps if coaching is a good fit, that's great. But we're going to do that free for all the watchers and listeners to this particular summit, and won't cost you a dime.
Hold on, hold on, hold on. You're telling me that people can chat to you guys for free for 25 minutes?
Sure, we love talking to them. For me, it's great because I get so much content that way. You know, getting writer's block, I get to put our fingers on the pulse of what people are really dealing with and the questions they ask, and it's a win-win for everybody involved.
Wow, that's really generous. That's a lot of time and a lot of people. So, guys, you should definitely take advantage of that. That's pretty awesome.
How many people are we talking about here? I didn't ask what the numbers are. Well, it's already out there. Call us up. You know,
too late.
Beat us. Make us walk like a duck. We're ready to talk to you,
Scott. This is a big summit. You're in trouble. Better get those fingers ready.
Well, we want everybody to experience the relationship that Scott and I enjoy.
Yeah, we're passionate about
it. People should be as happy and really get the most out of, you know, being in a wonderful relationship, because it does bring a lot of joy to one's soul when you have somebody who's looking out for you.
All right. Scott and Emily, you guys are fabulous. Thank you so much. Thank you for being here. I learned a lot, and I imagine everyone else learned a lot too. Thank you. Thank you. And we'll see you guys soon.
Thank you so
much.
Thank
you for having us.